This is Bristol Bay and Beyond for Friday, April 17th. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up this week, we'll remember a cherished elder from Igiagig who passed away.
He used to always say, "My one bad problem is I play too much bingo." And then she'd laugh.
One of Mary Olympic's granddaughters will join us to share some stories. The herring season is right around the corner, and we'll check in with a few of the fishermen heading out from the Dillingham Harbor. When the herring do arrive, Trident Seafoods hopes to test run its new multi-million dollar fish meal plant in Naknek. A KDLG reporter got a tour this week and brings us an inside look. Those plus a challenging poem from a talented high school student here in Dillingham.
My body will never be enough. I must be the smartest, the funniest, anything but fat.
Those stories coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. Alaska Governor Bill Walker declared this past week Wildland Fire Prevention and Preparedness Week, and Dillingham got more of an opportunity to prepare than bargained for. KDLG News spoke with Dillingham Volunteer Fire Department's Assistant Chief Malcolm Wright Wednesday evening, just after firefighters and other volunteers had gotten a handle of a quickly spreading grass fire off Wood River Road.
It did substantial damage to a small house and some outbuildings, and burnt over dead grass and a small amount of brush, probably, a few acres of that.
Authorities haven't determined the exact cause of the fire, but the city has put a burn ban back into effect. The state's Department of Fish and Game celebrated news that private funding had come through to keep the Round Island program up and running this year and probably next.
The private entities have stepped forward to help us fund it. It's wonderful, and we're going to be on the island. We're going to be there for a couple of reasons. One is to facilitate a visitor program out there so people can come out and enjoy the wildlife, particularly the walrus and the seabirds that are out there on the island, but also to protect the island, the sanctuary, and add to the conservation of walrus.
That's Lands and Refuge Coordinator Joe Meehan. Funding came from the Annenberg Foundation and several aquariums and zoos from around the country. Fish and Game hopes to put their two-person staff on the island this weekend. It was announced that the school board for the Aleutians East Borough voted to close down the school in Cold Bay after this semester, citing dwindling numbers of students and steep budget cuts from the state. Cold Bay will be the second school closed by Aleutians East in the past 3 years. A majority of Alaska's major salmon producers say they're in talks to rejoin the MSC label, which they dropped in 2012. The buyers, like Trident Seafoods, Icicle, Ocean Beauty, and others, say MSC is necessary to put their product on the shelves of some markets around the world. BBEDC President and CEO Norm Van Bachter says it's the right move to make.
You know, especially as it relates to the European consumer base, MSC is held in quite high regard, and it's a significant tool for salespeople that are trying to sell Alaska salmon to be able to get into certain marketplaces and get our product out in front of consumers.
The producers say they intend to keep the Alaska RFM label as well. The price of Brent crude oil hit $63 a barrel this week. That was the highest price all year, but political events on the horizon, such as lifting sanctions on Iran, may keep the global price of oil back down. NOAA released its annual status of stocks reports with some good news. 2014 had the lowest number of stocks overfished since NOAA began tracking the numbers in 1997. The only Alaska stock listed as overfished is blue king crab in the Pribilof Islands. Facing another quiet season at their work site north of Iliamna, the Pebble Limited Partnership announced it's holding a surplus sale to offload underused equipment. That's according to spokesperson Mike Heatwell.
We really have a lot of equipment that was sitting idle and essentially depreciating in value, and thought it made sense to sell some of that off. But we are maintaining what we would envision to need for a program in the future to support up to 3 drill rigs once we secure another partner for the project to advance us to the next phase.
Heatwell says Pebble is actively seeking that next investor to replace Anglo American to move the mine project forward. And the criminal case of Vincent Farler of Dillingham closed this week when the 22-year-old pleaded guilty to one count of second-degree theft. Farler had been accused of forging checks and stealing equipment from Monty Sivrid, who was dying of cancer. Sivrid passed away in January, and the prosecutor in charge of the case said it would have been hard to take to trial without its key witness. Farler was sentenced to serve 5 months in jail. Find more on this week's news at our website, kdlg.org. Tomorrow in the village of Igiagig, family and friends will gather to remember and celebrate the life of Mary Olympic. Olympic passed away Tuesday night at the age of 83 in a hospital in Anchorage. I spoke with one of her granddaughters, Christina Salmon, yesterday and asked her what about Mary made her so special to so many.
My grandma was very independent and strong and very hardworking. She believed in passing on her cultural knowledge to her children and her grandchildren and anybody in the region who wanted to listen and learn. She was happy to teach and share her traditional ideas.
What are some of the things you'll remember the most about Mary?
I'll remember that she had the biggest laugh and the biggest smile. And when she was teasing with you, she always had a mischief twinkle in her eye. I always remember how she taught us how to split fish, and it was kind of intimidating because she was so good at it. And her salmon fillets were amazing, and ours were just botched, and she was so patient with us.
What are some of the other things you've heard this week since news of her passing was announced?
Oh, a lot of people have been calling and emailing us, just telling us they'd never forget her smile and her laughter, her kindness. Strangers have reached out to us who I didn't even know, and, you know, have passed on condolences about a wonderful woman they met one time in Igiagig, you know, 30 years ago. They've just been coming out of the woodwork, and it's kind of amazing to see how many people's lives she touched, you know, that we weren't even aware about, people that only met her once but remembered her forever.
She was very important to the village of Igiagig, the matriarch of the village. Why is that?
Because she ruled with an iron fist, and she didn't say no. I mean, she could say no. She said no a lot, and she put her foot down when she needed to, but she also listened really well, and she also was very supportive of all of her grandchildren do a lot of roles that she used to do. And she tells us all the time how proud she, you know, would be of our work or things we were doing, and always had faith in us that we would do the right thing. And, you know, that is what really made her powerful. She knew right from wrong, and that was most important with her.
Christina, what about her background and her life? Did she gain these values? Maybe you can share a little bit about her life.
Well, she was born and raised in Kukauklik, on Kukauklik Lake area.
In a reindeer herding camp.
Yes, she was born into a reindeer herding family, and by the age of 13, she would be left alone to herd reindeer. Her father would let her and another friend manage the herd. So from a very young age, she knew hard work and responsibility. She would tell us stories of having to do dishes and laundry by hand and packing water by hand. And, you know, they lived without power. And all she knew was hard work and church. Her family was very religious as well.
And she was she was devout her whole life.
Yes, extremely.
And I hear she had the opportunity to celebrate Easter just last weekend.
She went to Anchorage for Easter services, but was not feeling well and couldn't make it to church. But she was admitted to the hospital and had pneumonia. But they don't think she died from causes from pneumonia. They believe it. Her heart was beating irregular, and they said they're fairly certain she just fell asleep.
Can you tell me about your anticipated funeral service? And from what I gather from down here, there's a lot of folks coming in almost a celebration of life mood, as much as they are there to mourn and pay respects.
Yes, this was all very tragic for us, and we did not expect this. And I had a really, really hard time pulling myself together. And today is probably the first day where I can kind of speak in complete sentences. We've gone days without sleeping, just being very upset. And she was brought home today, and I was able to see her. And her face is so calm, almost smiling. She just looks amazing, and I know that I, for my own selfish reasons, I'm very upset that she's gone because I wanted her forever. But I know that she's happy, and she is happy in heaven. I know it.
That was Christina Salmon speaking to us from Igiagig, where preparations are underway for funeral services for Mary Olympic tomorrow. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Yesterday, two biologists with the Department of Fish and Game flew the first aerial survey for the Togiak sacro herring fishery. They say they saw some fish, but not many. If the herring do show up as anticipated, this should be another big year, but there seems to be very low participation. That is likely on account of what most assume will be a price of $50 or less per ton. We sent KDLG's reporter Hannah Colton around the boatyard this week to see what was happening, and she brought us this report.
While wandering around the boat harbor this week, I did start to see some signs of life. The gates to the PAF yard have been opened, a handful of fishermen are working on their boats, and the supply stores are open for business. Mike Sparks of Alaska Nets says he and his son Matt arrived a bit earlier than usual this spring.
We're just here to, you know, do some remodeling, get things ready, and support any herring fishermen that will be here.
Okay. Have you had herring guys coming in already?
Just a couple, yeah. And some of them are trying to find a market. Some are trying to figure out if they're really going to fish.
That's something I heard a lot this week. Folks trying to figure out, is the herring fishery still worth it? There should be a lot of herring to harvest, but the price for Pacific herring is way down, and that's creating mixed emotions around the fishery. But despite all that, two seiners from Dillingham have decided to head out to Togiak this weekend. Skipper Robert Hyano was on board the Lady Mindy on a windy Tuesday morning, mending gear. He seemed relatively unfazed by the low forecast price.
I'm a creature of habit. I've been doing it since 78. There's not too much other fishing opportunities here, especially if you live here, other than salmon. So it's an opportunity where I can participate with basically the same equipment.
For Hyano, it seems the decision is simple. He'd rather be fishing than not. And he says it's not that expensive to go out with a local crew.
You know, as long as I don't run the boat up in the rocks or tear up the nets, there's still a little bit of money in there. So to me, it makes sense and hold my spot to have a market, which is pretty important.
Paul Friis-Mikkelsen, skipper of the Skagerrak, is seining for the first time in a decade. He thinks an underwhelming Canadian catch and a small quota out of Sitka this year could trigger a bump in the price of Togiak herring. Both Hyano and Friis-Mikkelsen are fishing with co-ops, the Lady Mindy for Trident and the Skagerrak for Silver Bay. And in what looks to be a small fleet, each seine crew will have their hands full. As Friis-Mikkelsen said, you have to catch a lot of fish at $50 a ton. And that's the kind of calculation that might be scaring away gillnetters entirely. After asking around all week, I wasn't able to find a single Dillingham gillnetter bound for Togiak. One gillnet skipper, Frank Woods, said the low price is keeping him away. His market couldn't guarantee even $40 a ton, and unfortunately, he said that math just doesn't work out. Matt O'Connell, skipper of the Owen, says he invested in new gillnet gear for herring in 2014.
I went last year and enjoyed it, and we actually made a little bit of money, but this year I have so many commitments and projects on the boat.
O'Connell said it actually would be worth it to go for herring again this year, but with vessels needing work, his time is better spent getting ready for salmon.
Yeah, exactly. I have a couple of large projects that I want to get done before the monster salmon run, so herring, it would just make that too busy, too tight of a schedule. Yeah.
Okay, what kind of stuff do you have?
Remounting a reel and doing some refrigeration work and lots of nets to hang. My son, his boat right there has an engine that's going to get put in, so I'm going to help with that. So between all of that, yep, busy.
On the buyer side, there are 5 processors lined up to purchase herring this year. That list does not include Icicle's Wood River plant, which is working on some upgrades ahead of the salmon season. According to Fish and Game, the earliest harvest from the Togiak herring fishery was in 2003. It was April 25th. Now, looking at high sea temperatures this spring, Fish and Game says it's possible we could see a new record earliest start date for herring this year. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
Over in Naknek, Trident Seafoods is waiting on some herring to give its new fish meal plant a thorough test before it goes into full operation for this summer's salmon season. Residents are still a little leery of what some think may be a smelly addition to the town, but Trident says the new technology inside of this multi-million dollar plant will do its job. Trident opened their doors this week to our reporter Matt Martin for an inside look as they've put the final touches on Bristol Bay's newest processing plant.
Construction workers hammer and weld to the twang of country music as they wrap up construction on the fish mill plant in Naknek. The walls are still unfinished drywall, and wooden stairs stand in for a future elevator. Project manager Bob Bates shows off the largest piece of machinery in the plant, a 50-foot-long, 60,000-pound dryer.
Because we actually set this unit here when this was still all mud and dirt. So we built the building around this dryer.
The dryer spins around in the center of the factory like a giant rolling pin.
The inside of this thing looks like something out of a sci-fi movie with all the teeth and the blades and everything in it to mix it and turn it and churn it through and get it rolling through.
About a quarter mile of tubing moves all the leftover parts after a fish is filleted or canned. That's the heads, guts, fins, and bones. They come from Trident's processing plant to this new $15 million plus fish mill plant. After being ground up and dried, the byproduct of salmon can become animal feed and even those fish oil pills you can buy at Costco. Trident also owns separate companies that produce fish meal products.
Fish meal makes great fertilizer. It's pure fish protein.
Along with helping their business model, Trident agreed to build this plant as part of a 2011 settlement with the EPA, which had tallied a number of alleged Clean Water Act violations against the company's Alaska operations. Officials at Trident said they weren't required to build a fish mill plant in Naknek, but they think this is where the Bristol Bay fishing industry is probably headed anyway. The EPA and Alaska's DEC are tightening down on how processors handle the millions of pounds of fish waste that is traditionally ground up and put back in the water, hopefully to wash out with the tides. But some Naknek residents were and still are leery about having a fish mill plant in town. They have a reputation of being smelly.
You know, I talked to different people that have been to Kodiak and Dutch Harbor and various other places.
That's Jay King. He runs an aviation service in Naknek and is among those still not convinced the plant won't stink up the town. King's not opposed to the plant so much as he is opposed to its location.
Being next to the post office, the school, the clinic, my brother's apartment building, I just didn't think that it was such a good idea to have a potential odor issue with all of these, you know, entities.
Others say with or without the new fish mill plant, summertime odor is a common issue and comes with the territory.
This is a fishing town.
Russell Phelps is a commercial fisherman and member of the borough assembly. He thinks taking waste out of the water might actually help the smell.
And so the beaches in the late July and August stink considerably already. So if we could avoid that, I'd be very happy.
Before the borough gave its consent to Trident to build, a few members traveled to Newport, Oregon to tour a 20-year-old fish mill plant that had been upgraded with modern technology similar to what's being used in Naknek. They came back less skeptical. The assembly heard from plenty of concerned residents, but in the end voted to approve the fish mill plant. Some supporters think fish mill may be the future of the fishery, and others appreciate what will be added tax revenue to the borough. Phelps was among the yes votes.
We shouldn't stop a project just because we think it's going to stink.
Trident has a strong reputation in town, and the seafood giant says it puts nearly $1 million in taxes annually into the borough, and tens of thousands more in charitable donations. Project manager Bob Bates says Trident will do what it takes to stay good with neighbors in the community.
From day one, the goal was to keep the odor down, to clean up the river, and basically produce a meal.
And at the heart of its effort to keep the odor down is a new air filtration system. Standing at the base of a 3-story metal tube with ducting that snakes around the entire warehouse, Bates describes how it will keep the smell of drying fish waste out of the breezy bayside town of Naknek.
So basically what we're doing is we're drawing fresh air down below, and we're sucking everything up to ensure that we capture all the odors and everything that comes through this facility and gets pushed through these scrubbers.
Inside are thousands of white scrubbers that look like wiffle balls. Water is sprayed down as the air rises. The odor molecules stick to the water.
By the time the air comes back out of here, we pulled the majority of all the odors out with this system and all the dust.
Some residents, like Jay King, say they'll have to wait and see, or rather smell, what happens.
You know, it's here, and I'm honestly just hoping that it is as advertised by Trident.
They'll get their chance soon enough. Trident plans to run a final test of the system with water in a few days. But as far as a true test with fish heads and guts, well, Bob Bates says he can build factories, but he can't control fish. They'll test it for real when the Togiak herring arrive, probably before the month is out. In Dillingham, I'm Matt Martin.
Since 1981, writers of every age have been participating in an annual creative writing contest held by UAA and now with the Alaska Dispatch as a partner. Submissions were due in February, and winners will be officially announced and published in the Dispatch in mid-May. But one Dillingham High School student says she's been notified that she won in a poetry category, and we're very excited to welcome her on this program for a sneak peek at her work.
I prefer Sherry O'Connor, even though my birth name is much longer and complicated, and I'm in 10th grade.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
What inspires you to sit down and creatively write?
Well, if I'm feeling any emotion particularly strongly, I want to write it down because that kind of helps me go through it a little bit more than just, like, not doing anything with it. And sometimes I'll be, like, going to bed, drifting off to sleep, and I'll be like, I have a poem idea, and I'll write a couple lines, and I'll wake up, and I'll read over it, and I'll add to it or something. So it usually starts from one of those ways.
Is it difficult to write now with all of the distractions that we have digitally?
Well, I think that it helps, actually, because I wasn't writing spoken word, which is what this is. I wasn't writing that until this year or last year because I didn't know what it was. And I always thought I was not good at expressing myself, and I watched a couple of videos on YouTube, you know. And it really helped me figure out that I liked to do it. And I use my phone, actually, a lot to write. I have this cool journal my sister gave me that I use, too. But a lot of the time it's in my phone because I carry that everywhere. So I just open up a document, and I'm like, ooh, got some ideas.
So anywhere you're at, you put down a few lines.
Yeah, if I find something, if I hear something, I'm like, huh. If I think of something, I'll just be like, minding my own business, maybe doing some math, and I'm like, oh, that's a really good line I just thought of out of nowhere. Write it down.
Where do you want writing to take you in the future?
Well, I always wanted to do something with writing, I think, but I don't feel that it's as practical as a career because I'm not as good as I want to be. So maybe after I get better, I can do something with it. But for now, I think it's just like a hobby. But winning competitions, that's cool too. Might make that my goal for my future.
Well, let's. What is this competition, and how did you decide to enter it?
Well, it's the Alaska Dispatch News Creative Writing Competition, and my English teacher, bless her soul, Miss Bud Bill, really encouraged us to do it because we're doing a unit on poetry, and she's like, "You guys, if you enter, you'll get extra credit, and I think it's really great for you guys to try." So I'm like, "All right, I'll try." I didn't need the extra credit, but I wanted to do it, so I tried it, and it was apparently a good idea.
And tell me, before we get to this poem, tell me about this poem.
Well, how do I explain it?
Or you don't have to if you don't want to. Maybe the poetry will speak for itself.
Oh, it does speak for itself a lot, but I think it was really just over time how I have felt and, like, what I've been inspired for, like, thinking. And, like, just how people treat me, I think. And it's really just, like, came out all at once. And I've edited this poem a couple times, and I think, I don't know if this is the exact one that won, but I might have revised it. I think I took out a couple lines one other time I've written it. So some of it has more, some of it has less. So.
And this will appear in the Alaska Dispatch News the first part of next month.
Yes.
Are you nervous about that?
Not entirely. I mean, I don't think my friends ever thought of me as very much of a poet, because I never shared anything with them, but I think they'll be proud of this poem because I know I'm proud of it. This is one of the best poems I've ever written.
And do you mind reading it for us on KDLG?
No, I'm good. I can read it. Being a fat girl means that I'm given new names that I haven't asked for. Curvy, thick, chunky, big. I'm supposed to take these words, these names for myself. Supposed to swallow them like cough syrup, thick and bitter in my throat. I am supposed to be grateful. Grateful that skinny people have found another way to forget that we exist. Fat is another word we want to forget. The very word is cursed, used only for describing cattle and livestock. They think us no better than pigs. Being a fat girl means that I have to work for boys' attention, and I have to work hard, harder than anybody, and still, they must be bigger than me. Boys who do not care that my stomach can hold oceans because theirs can too. They don't care that my thighs are tree trunks, they climb them with grace. Boys who like me hate themselves. They have lower self-esteem than me. I find boys who do not know the difference between love and sex. Boys who will settle. Being a fat girl means overcompensating because people will never like me once they see me. First impressions fail me. People only see protruding stomachs and laziness. My eyes could be as blue as the sky and my skin as dark as olives, but my body will never be enough. I must be the smartest, the funniest, anything but fat. Being a fat girl means being constantly under fire. I totally, like, hate those overly confident fat girls. But who else but us will be happy for fat girls? Or call us cute? Or care for us? Or love us? Why doesn't she just like herself? Because we were never allowed to. Lastly, being a fat girl means that I must find solace in fat arms, in fat stomachs, in fat faces of other fat girls. They show me that we are worthwhile, that fat girls matter.
Everybody's been there, everybody's been stared down by the enemy. Fallen for the fear and done some disappearing. Bowed down to the mighty. Don't run and stop holding your tongue. Maybe there's a way.
Our thanks to Sherry O'Connor for sharing that poem, which won a statewide contest and will appear in the Alaska Dispatch News next month. That's it for this week's show. Send your feedback and ideas to us at news@kdlg.org. Bristol Band Beyond will take next week off, but we'll be back the 1st of May. I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here in a few weeks.
Honestly, I want to see you be brave with what you want to say. Let the words fall out. Honestly, I want to see you be brave. I want to see you be brave. see.